Audio.
Come on over, little lassie. I'm going to show you how to podcast.
Okay.
Oh, you don't worry your little head about that. You just go ahead and get GarageBand, and old Texas will take care of the rest.
Are you insane?
They are insane.
You're in the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate.
But met frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
Ghostbusters!
Oh, my gosh. You, as the listener, have just heard a sample of deleted dialogue. It was deleted because they didn't realize that it was going to be set into the future and they didn't know what podcasts were. But now we're here to tell you that I'm Mike McCafferty and I just want to talk about Star Trek. And I just want to talk about one of the weirdest gambling episodes they ever had, I guess. So here's the deal.
Another episode based on a book guiding human society.
You know, this is true. So welcome, everybody. My name is Mike McCafferty. I just want to talk about Star Trek. I'm here with the doctor, otherwise known as?
Kim Miller.
Kimberly Miller. Middle name unknown. Unless you dig deep into the archives here of I just want to talk about Star Trek. Thank you for joining us. Follow us on at Mike McCafferty. At Flibbidip, and on the Facebook page, I just want to talk about Star Trek. Okay. So I went to... How are you, Kim?
Your camera? It's very jittery to sound.
My camera's jittery? All right. Now, how's that? Is that better?
That might be better. Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't care how it sounds to you. It sounds great to me. I'm recording it. Am I okay now?
Of course. Sure.
All right. It's at midnight... on a Tuesday, now Wednesday, and we're recording. I just got back yesterday from Reno, Nevada, where my kid did gymnastics. He did well. Took second place in regions. Not bad.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty good. We went to Tahoe after that and had a good time. But I was thinking about it, and I was like in Reno at a casino. And it was so... horrible that it reminded me of the Royale. So tonight we're going to be talking about the TNG episode, season 2, episode 12, I believe, of the Royale.
Mm-hmm.
Kim, thoughts? Go.
One of my absolute least favorite Next Generation episodes.
Least favorite? Why? What? Oh.
It's just so annoying at so many levels.
So,
from Data suddenly becoming this super cool gambler, Deanna able to detect Riker's emotions hundreds of miles below her. Oh, God.
Yes. This is an episode which is still suffering from TNG still trying to figure out what it wants to do. I haven't watched this for a long time. I watched little snippets of it. I watched the whole thing in Reno and maybe Tahoe. I can't remember which one. Doesn't matter. But I watched it and it's a good idea, badly executed. You won't even go that far, will you, Kim?
Let me hear your argument.
Come on, little lady. You're going to like this.
That's another reason this episode is so annoying. Another airhead, stupid female character.
And she doesn't even have a name. I don't think. I think like his name is Texas.
She's Vanessa, of course.
Oh, Vanessa. All right, good. Thank you for looking that up. Texas, whoever that guy was.
When Riker gives her some money, here you go, Vanessa.
Oh, here you go, Vanessa. When the train comes in, everyone rides. So I'm going to tell you guys, I love that phrase. When the train comes in, everyone rides. See, now we're starting to move a little faster. Now I'm on board with this episode because there's so many great, terrible lines in this. It's bad. But as Kim pointed out before I got sidetracked, is that this episode is thematic with our last episode, A Piece of the Action, in that it is about gangsters and books that have affected that.
And it has terrible saxophone interludes. Wah, 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 again.
Wow. This is the 1980s trying to do a bad job at portraying noir films and doing a bad job at portraying a bad noir film, if you can understand that. It fails on every level. It can't even be like ironic or parodying it or satirical. And there's nothing about it which it does well. And this is something which is actually admitted by the producers and the writers. They said this, we kind of lost the ball on this. Sometimes you, in fact, one of the quotes was that sometimes you just got to make television. And they ran out of time to make this a good episode, so they just made it an episode. But with that, Kim Miller, let's talk about The Royale.
Well, right off the top, I noticed that when he's setting up the whole storyline and saying that we were just diverted from our scheduled course. Did you notice that he says scheduled instead of his usual scheduled?
Oh, no, I didn't know.
Good. So I'm wondering if, like, early on they were trying to play down his very Englishness.
It could be. Now, as I recall, there are different producers here for this season, which the fired Gates McFadden and brought in Dr. Pulaski, Diana Muldar, because Gates McFadden pissed them off or something like that. So already they're off to a bad start. This season two has the highs and the lows of the early TNG. And so maybe they were trying to get it out of him. Or maybe he just like recorded it on the day and just thought, oh, good enough. You know, and no one thought to ask him to say schedule instead of schedule. So, all right, so...
My feeling here is like, you sound super English, Patrick. Can you not say schedule?
Can you give us one more, Patrick, where you just say schedule instead of schedule? Captain Kirk or William Shatner has one of those.
Diverted from their scheduled course because of a passing Klingon cruiser. So debris in orbit of Theta 8.
Theta 8, yeah, that's a pretty... Actually, that planet's pretty far out there. If you're going to go by, like, numerically, like, Theta 8's pretty far, I guess, in the solar system, right? So yeah, it's a big green gas giant, but it's not a gas giant. It's just like a gaseous planet with all sorts of noxious chemicals on it. And?
Oh, and then we launch into a discussion of Fermat's Last Theorem.
Oh, yeah, this is great. So so Captain Picard doesn't
have... Because he's French, remember?
Because he's French. Fermat's Last Theorem. Oh, and I was remembering that, like, you were saying the schedule, and William Shatner had a thing. There's a famous audio clip where he refuses to say sabotage. He says sabotage. Says sabotage. Says sabotage. It's like a weird clip. You can look it up. So I'm kind of in a weird mood tonight. Like, I don't think I'm that funny right now. All day today, I've not been that funny. So we've got to draw it out of me.
Wait, weren't you at work? Oh no.
What's that?
Weren't you at work? Were you required to be funny?
I was, and I felt like I was having like some sort of like aphasic moment where like I was trying to say words and weird things were coming out. Like maybe I was like preparing for a stroke, like, or aphasic. Something. And it just, like, everything I was trying to say was just not funny.
Oh God, I know. Let's podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while though. It's been a while since we podcast. So I was like, well, we got to do one. And I've been gone all week, and I wanted to do it. I wanted to have this one when I was in Reno at a casino. We were going to podcast it, but you had something going on and you nixed
that. I was willing, and then you said, tired, old man.
Oh, well, this is true. I also said that. It was long. My kid, he does these gymnastics meets, and it takes like 6 hours, and it's so draining of energy. I'm just exhausted. Yes.
Jesus.
We got there. We left at 11:30, got there at 12 o'clock, where he starts warming up. They started at 1:30. And awards finished at 6:30 at night. So this thing just goes on all day. And it is so exhausting. There? What's that?
Did you fly or you drove?
We flew, yeah, which was good because there was a big snowstorm.
I was going to say, on top of a long drive, ugh, that would have been exhausting.
Yeah, well, you know, JetBlue was also delayed like 2 hours. Not that that's a big deal, considering the United thing of like dragging people out of planes, but... it did make it a
We're
little
not longer. Talking about Star Trek.
We're not talking about Star Trek. My God, we got delayed. We got delayed by the Royale. So Patrick Stewart, Jean-Luc Picard is lounging in his captain's quarters, in his ready room, looking at Fermat's Last Theorem, because that's all he needs to do in life. Is just
that's
like
what he does when he's kicking back You can load off. Ah, let me look up 800-year-old mathematical problems.
He's just kind of like pondering this just so lightly. Oh, you know. Oh, hello, Riker. How's that mission we're going on? How's that going?
We saw some debris. But what are you doing, sir?
Yeah, it's
Matt's last there.
This unsolvable thing, which was solved in 1995, by the way, in real life.
What?
Yeah, it was. Fermat's Last Theorem was actually solved in 1995, like 6 years after this came out. So it's not been solved for over 800 years, Riker. Well, it actually kind of has, Patrick.
Right on schedule.
Right on schedule. Sabotage. So they find this. So the Klingons report there's debris. See, this is kind of a weird thing, too, right? So the Klingons are... They're going around the solar system. It's like, oh, well, we have this, we've noticed this debris and we're in the system.
we don't have time. Let's just tell the Federation.
Let's go tell the Federation that there's debris around this planet.
So divert their flagship to go check this.
Leave this an ambassador class, a galaxy class starship. Yes, the flagship goes over to check out debris. It's sort of like telling like Air Force One to go like check out like some like, oh, you know, there's a hubcap on like the 405. Could you fly over there and make sure that there's nothing weird about that? Yep. Yeah, we'll go. We'll be right on that. So
they
go there.
Beam aboard a piece of debris.
Oh, this is true. Yeah, they beam aboard a piece of debris. And luckily, that piece of debris has some very important lettering on it. Very, very fortuitous. What does it say, Kim?
NASA,
which stands for
Aeronautic and Space Administration. Nautical. Oh, now you made me forget.
National Aeronautic and Space Administration.
National Aeronautic and Space Administration.
You may have yes. NASAN. We put nautical at the end of it.
I'm from 800 years ago. I came up with a theorem and I scribbled it in the ish.
This is Fermat's last podcast, basically. All right, so Picard has no time to beam down. It seems dangerous, so let's beam down a minimal away team, which, of course, comprises of three of the command crew, basically.
Well, before that, they talk about what they've found on the surface. Wesley, good old Wesley, finds a building on the surface.
Oh, yes, yeah. So they find a building on the surface, which is odd enough. In this strange, like the winds are blowing and it's like ammonium and all this weird stuff. And there's this building with an atmosphere. And so far, they're pretty chill about this. Like, oh, well, that's kind of odd. It's a little strange. Don't know what to make of that. You should beam down a minimal away team.
Should be fine.
Yeah, so they beam down the only android they have in the Federation.
This priceless android,
the first Klingon ever to be in Starfleet, and the first officer for the flagship of the Federation. This is
not three red shirts. No.
No. See, yeah, they don't even beam down red shirts. They should beam down red shirts and had like, a couple of them killed off. But no, they're going to beam down these three guys.
They beam them down onto the set of the Empath, as seen in the original scene.
Excellent. Yes. Well, not before we have a quick scene with O'Brien. In high definition, you can see the foam padding for any sort of like recording booth that you've ever seen.
What?
The walls are basically like that foam padding that you whenever you go to a recording booth, like that sound buff, like baffling stuff. So anyway, so you're right. They do beam down to a jet black area, which has very bad effects over it of the clouds flying overhead.
Yes, I never understand that. Why is it so black all around them? I think there would be like a little bubble within the storm.
Yeah, it's there would be something a little more. I guess not only is is there a bubble above, but there's a bubble on the ground because they're beaming onto like a perfectly flat black surface. But they don't see the building. What do they see, Kim? They only see one thing.
Worf spots it. A revolving door. An antique.
An antique revolving door. because they didn't have the budget to make a building on the soundstage. Or I guess go shoot someplace. They could have gone to a location and actually shot the revolving door, you know, in a building or something. So they get to this revolving door, and of course, this is really weird. A spinning revolving door, revolving under its own volition with nothing else around it. And so what do they do? What should they do, Kim? And then what do they do?
They should report back and then wait for security?
Yes.
No, let's just go through.
Yeah, there's about 800 different things they could do, which is probably more appropriate than going through the strange revolving door. If you and I, Kim, are walking around like in Van Nuys and there's a revolving door just like out of nowhere, just like revolving, you know, in Van Nuys, like
in a black void.
In a black void. We shouldn't go through it, right? I would like.
No. Of course, we should run through it.
We should go through it and see what happens. So our intrepid crew go through, although not from the intrepid, I should say. That was from the immunity factor, I believe. Isn't that the Vulcan constitution class? I believe. Ooh, I think so. So they go through the revolving door and they go into this amazing hotel. Kim, am I being honest or am I being sarcastic about that?
Sarcastic.
Yes.
Very depressing, brightly lit hotel.
Yes.
There you are.
Yeah, say that again. You kind of faded out again. You went through the black void as well.
Just couldn't resist. I just wanted to run right through. Well, they go walk right into this very brightly lit, filled with a bunch of Yahoo extras. Dressed in varying degrees of dressiness. One woman is wearing like a gown with diamonds. The other woman walks through in like a denim shirt. Jay Leno uniform, denim and denim. It was like, what a weird mix. What were these people told to wear? Bring your own clothes. All right, I brought this. You have anything else? No. Oh, that's fine.
You know, they can costume like any alien in the galaxy, but they cannot figure out how to costume people of this era. Of the late 80s, because everyone, you're right, everyone just kind of shows up in their own outfits and like, yep, you're good. Some people are dressed for dinner parties. Some people are dressed like to be in a Bruce Springsteen video. It's just this weird mishmash. Like that one woman's like wearing this weird silver costume with a hood. It's like, where are you from? I mean... It is. If you haven't seen it, it's more terrifying than the cantina band, the cantina scene in Star Wars. Because these people are firmly trapped in the 80s.
Yes. Was this 89, 88, 89?
I think it's like 89. I think, I believe Star Trek came out 88, and this is second season, so 89 is when this aired. Okay. 87 was the first. Yeah. So of course, you know, Riker and Worf and Data just start, you know, milling around, right?
And someone says, if you're here to check in, go to the front desk.
Right. Is it the bellhop who says that?
Mm-hmm. I forgot. It's just some hotel employee. I forgot if it's the guy that we see later on.
Okay. So then they go to the creepy front desk manager who's just... like in a whole different dimension of acting like creepy and weird and, you know, Hotel California-ish, right? I mean, this is like his shining moment to, you know.
We've been expecting you.
Yeah.
Trio of foreign gentlemen.
Yes.
Throughout this episode, Worf has barely any lines. I'm sure he was like, why am I here?
Well, he does have a couple of good lines in the middle. He does do a couple of fun things. But yeah, you're right. He just basically just kind of walks around and looks confused. They all kind of do. I mean, I guess this is Riker's episode and Data a little bit. Once Data has the second half of the episode for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Riker the first and Worf is just kind of the, you know, the placeholder between the two of them.
But then the bellboy comes in asking, is Rita called? And you have this weird scene, this horrible Dixon Hill-ish scene.
Yes.
And as soon as they mention the word Rita, wah, 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 wah,
It goes straight into 80s saxophone era, which I'm surprised there's not a saxophone guy who just like pops out of a panel or something who just starts playing saxophone because it's so bad.
Undershirt, suspenders.
Yeah. Remember that big strong guy who used to play saxophone? There was like a strong guy who played, I think, like for Tina Turner and sometimes for Duran Duran. Do you remember that guy?
You're not talking about Clarence Clemons, are you?
No, Clarence Clemons is like a big fat guy. You know, no, there's he's in.
Did you get that family of Clarence Clemons?
well, he was, you know.
Send your angry tweets to at Mike McCafferty.
He's passed away, and I believe he played Santa Claus, I think, in one of Bruce Springsteen's music videos. So I could say
Post a photo on your Facebook when you figure out who it is. If any of your listeners know who we're talking about, immediately post a photo on Facebook.
Well, I mean, it is apropos of the time period, that's for sure. So, but there were a lot of saxophone. If you didn't grow up in the 80s, there were a lot of saxophone solos for some reason in the 80s. I don't know why, but there was a lot of good saxophonists who like made a lot of money during that period of time. Tina Turner and Bruce Springsteen and Duran Duran. They all had saxophone solos. That was the way to do it. The Royale, as weird as the Royale is, the bigger question is why the 80s feature so many saxophone solos. Don't you think, Kim? I mean,
that was my first question. No, it was not.
All right.
No, but it's so jarring when it starts. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
All right, we get it. Mood.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of Mickey D. Kids just asking for trouble. This weird scene right in front of the three of them.
Yeah, pretty much an earshot of everyone.
Oh, don't worry. Our people just checking in. Mickey D's going to plant his face in the pavement. Jesus. Yes. All right. Is there a cafe here?
Now, we should also add that Mickey D at the time was kind of a name for McDonald's.
It still is.
It still is, but like it was really hot then, and calling it Mickey D's. Let's go to Mickey D's, man. And the fact that they called the guy Mickey D at the height of Mickey D's was really weird. It's like it was a very tone deaf kind of thing. It's like
it's not the scariest sounding name.
Yeah. Oh, Mickey D's gonna come over here, and then the King of Burgers is gonna stop by, and then Jack and Carl's Jr. will be here. You're like, oh well, you got them all. You know, yeah, as soon as you see Wendy, tell her I love her.
Jeez.
I know.
Wendy, wah, wah.
All right, so they're playing out this weird scene that comes of nothing, and then the crew continue to look around. They can't contact the Enterprise, but that seems to be okay to Riker.
Yeah, because now they've been given chips.
Right, they've been given gambling chips, which seems to be okay. And see, this is the other thing about this episode which really bugs me. I'm sure lots of things bug you, too. But this episode's so lazy about the level of danger. You know, like the level of protocol when going to an unusual situation.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're not armed, are they? Are they armed when they beam down? I don't remember.
Yeah, they are armed. They have their phasers. Remember, they shoot the wall later on, like they move like a slot machine out of the way, and then they shoot the wall with their phaser to no effect.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Doesn't make any sense. But Riker up
in, that none of the people are. Go on.
Oh, I was just you were going to say none of the people are what?
Oh, Data notices that none of the people are emitting life signs.
Yeah, they're basically just like weird. They don't quite say what they are. Just that they're not emitting life signs, which, you know, are they made of plastic? Are they, you know, clay? I don't understand what, like, he doesn't go into depth of what they are. Well, they're not emitting life signs. Well, then what the hell are they? But again, we're going
to. It's like Fermat's theorem. You're
it's just a continuing mystery.
Except for 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, for the next 6 years, we won't be able to figure this out. All right. So they go over to the casino, the blackjack table. That's the first place they go, right?
I think one of the things that bugs me most about this whole episode is you start seeing it in this scene is where Brent Spiner is just acting so hard, more than he does in later seasons. Like all the wacky reactions and all this stuff. It's just, it's annoying.
Yes, it's baby needs new pair of shoes. That is a classic line.
But I actually noticed I was watching the Miri episode, and I was watching a little bit of Corbin White Maneuver earlier today, and Leonard Nimoy does the same thing too. I guess you can't blame both of them too much because they're still figuring out their characters. Like, Spock is so angry sometimes when he was still barking out orders like he's in a submarine.
Oh, in the Corbin White Maneuver? Yeah, yeah. In the Corbin Maneuver, yeah, it's still kind of the shakedown. Now, that episode was actually like third or fourth or maybe second in production order. So it aired like ninth because the special effects took so long. Yeah, so that's why he's acting really way out of character. He has like, right, Shields?
Because he's in command of the ship at the very top of that episode because Kirk is doing that weird pumping the... the blocks and
I just imagine there's
talk about that episode.
There's like someone on the other side pushing those blocks back or something, you know. I mean, there has to be.
They're doing all the work.
All right.
So when, after that, he's just walking through the corridors all sweaty with no shirt.
Oh God, I forgot about that. It's because it's a red alert, and they have to like run off to the
That's right. Yeah. My moon shuttle conductor. Right, we'll come back to that.
All right, we'll come back to the Corbin Maneuver. That's actually a pretty good episode. So
we're in the casino.
Yeah, we're in the casino. All right, now let's pick up the pace on this a little bit. This is going to be a 25-hour podcast here if we don't pick it up here. I mean, I know I love talking about it. This is such a great bad episode that it's easy to linger over it. Especially with these two characters we meet. We meet Texas and Vanessa. Is that who it is?
Yep.
And they, my God, the scenes they play. We could probably do a one-act play just with those scenes. Oh, God. Because they are so compelling. I don't know what to do. Oh, little honey, let me show you what to do.
You got 15. He's got a 10 showing.
What do I do? Do I hit Texas?
Shut up.
Oh, yeah. So we have two very strong stereotypes here of kind of the floozy of the 80s and the Texas oil billionaire who's going to run out of money for some reason. I don't quite understand what's going on with that.
Puts his hat on Data.
And then he
instantly looks 5 years old when he puts on.
Yeah, gets a little smirk on his face, showing all these emotions. And then he asks him if he wants to play blackjack. And I like how long it takes Data to figure out what blackjack is.
Accessing.
Ah, blackjack. Like if I typed blackjack into Google, it would know what blackjack is much faster than Data did. Took him a long time to get to that. Blackjack should be like one of his apps that's running in the background. Of his, I mean, like every computer has Blackjack, right? Blackjack and Solitaire. He should have that running.
Never thought of Data having apps.
It's just one of those. It's like on Windows. You know, every Windows program had Solitaire. Every Windows computer had Solitaire and like the pinball game. So like Data has that. He's always playing pinball in the back of his mind. It's just that it's always playing.
Words with friends.
Yeah, exactly. So they play through this weird little tragedy of them losing money constantly. And nothing's really accomplished with that scene. And then they try to leave, right? Isn't they try to leave? Is the next thing that happens?
Yeah.
We have to stop, though, because this guy, Texas, man, he is playing it so big.
What?
This is dinner theater level acting here.
Noble Willingham, he gets like special credit at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, he gets like a special guest star or something, or you know, special guest star as Texas. Like, okay, as the state of Texas.
Need a placeholder name. Ah, Texas is fine.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry, I tried to mute it. Sorry about that, everybody. All right, so they try to leave. This is pretty good too. So they try to leave by walking through the revolving door, right?
Pinnacle of acting in the episode. Come back in and look shocked.
As we see them make a complete revolution through the revolving door. Now, see if this was if this was like a real like thing, is the minute they cross through the first panel, they should appear again. Right? There's like one, like there's four, there's like four sections of the revolving door, and really they shouldn't, they should go through like two of them and then appear right back out.
Yeah, that's true.
But instead, they walk through like the whole revolution and then come right back out.
They're clearly on the other side for a good 3 seconds.
They clearly make it through the other side and then they choose to walk back in.
Maybe you guys don't know how to work a revolving door. You're supposed to leave when you get out the other side.
That could be it. See, that could be the problem because they don't know how to work elevators. They don't know anything about blackjack. They don't know how to use a revolving door.
Three Stooges style exit.
Get out of the way, you mugs. They all try to go at the same time.
All right, come so back in. Data has, let's find another way. Data talks to old ladies at the slot machine. And that's where Worf pulls through.
What? Kim?
I'm talking to myself.
Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Okay, we almost had to penetrate the bubble. and that's when they're back on the ship, and he says you can achieve penetration or something like that. Picard says that to Wesley.
That's odd.
It was very odd. That may be a clip that's going to be on our opening very soon. I don't know.
Oh yeah.
Can you achieve penetration? I'm like, oh my God. How can you say that to a 15-year-old boy? What the hell is going on here? Is there no standards and practices back then? It's just yeah, we're going to make that. That sounds pretty good. Yeah, can you penetrate? Yeah.
Oh.
Because we haven't talked about back on the ship.
Yeah. Because Deanna is pretty much sitting down for the whole episode. The situation down there has changed. It was tense. What is this nonsense that she's able to sense emotions on a planet surface when she's not even in contact with them?
Yeah, Deanna's powers were always very flexible. I mean, sometimes she could sense someone's emotions on a ship, you know, thousands of kilometers away when they're talking to each other.
Kind of buy it, yeah, if they're in communication. They're completely cut off.
Yeah. Ugh. And hangnail. Here's the thing. This is why this is all such a lazy episode as well, as far as protocol, because they can't get in touch with the away team, but that's okay. Like Riker's like, oh, it's not like Riker to not contact me after they've lost contact. I mean, it's like, this is a big thing. Send down more people. You've lost contact with them. And Deanna's like, I only sense amusement. You know, like, what the fuck are you talking about? Go down there and get your guys.
Nah, it's fine. Everything seems fine.
Just keep on. Yeah, and they've got Geordi and Wesley up there. You know, well, if we can use the positronic overflow, we can probably get through the bubble. You know, oh, okay. Well, I guess we'll just keep working on that. Nothing else to do.
But we're treated to another scene with the bellboy talking to the front desk guy.
Yes,
this is a gun in his belt.
Right, yeah. So now we see the danger. There is a gun. It is not Chekhov's gun. It's Bellboy's gun. But we know that gun will come into play at some point in time. Actually, it doesn't. He never uses it. Now that I think about it, he shows a gun, but Mickey D's the only person who fires a gun. Mm-hmm. So they decide to go up to the room, as I recall, because they find human DNA or something, human remains. They go up to the penthouse or something.
It's just a room, but all right.
Yeah, I'm going to call it the penthouse. What the hell, right? I mean, if they don't have the production values for it, I'm going to give it to them. They go up to a penthouse suite.
Fine.
They go in there, and then they find this guy underneath this. Like, he basically tucked himself into bed to die. And now we find out what's going on.
Yep.
Because he left one journal entry.
That's right. In 38 years.
In 38 years.
He had one thing to say.
Yeah, he had one thing. So if you, Kim, are trapped in a Holiday Inn Express for 38 years with characters who say the same thing over and over again, What are you just going to write one note? You know, hey, I've been here 30. You know, I should leave a note. God, I'm almost dead.
I'm going to carefully hang up my uniform in this closet.
Yep, going to hang up my uniform.
Nice spacesuit.
Yeah.
gonna tuck myself in.
write a little note and then pull the covers up over my head and die.
I've got one thing to say.
Yeah. which is actually very, very useful. Like he, after 38 years, he very actually, concise. Yeah, very concise, you know, 200 words or less, a strange alien parasite. Isn't that what it was? Like a.
Yeah. It was, didn't make sense for earlier on, which I'll come back to. But he says our shuttle was contaminated by an alien life form.
Alien life form.
Killed everyone but me.
Yeah.
And then at the beginning, when they were examining that piece of debris that said NASA on it. And Data said, no, it seems like it was hit by a weapon of our time. So like, was it hit by a weapon or was it contaminated? So both?
That's good. That's a good call. I didn't realize. I wasn't thinking about that. Yeah, because it is kind of a weird, like, all of a sudden that it's not hit by an alien weapon. Instead, yeah, that doesn't make sense, right?
Maybe I mean, like, so attacked them and then boarded their ship. I don't know what could have happened there.
Yeah, so did, like, it shoot an energy beam and then, like, jump in the ship and, like, oh, my God, I've killed all these creatures that I shot an energy beam at.
Except for that guy.
Except for...
be nice to that guy.
Yeah, let's trap him in this hell for 38 years.
Everyone, sneeze into your elbow. Don't contaminate that guy.
Yeah.
But, hey, there's a book.
Let's... We're smart enough to read a book, but not smart enough to take the ship
to and... talk to him and say, hey... kind of world would you like to live?
Or where's your home planet? We could probably take you and drop you off if you want. No,
this is easier.
So I was in a car accident like a couple weeks ago, and you know I felt bad about it, but I did not pick up the person for which I hit, or they actually they like turned in front of me, and I had no choice but to hit them. I didn't put them in my car and then take them to someplace far away and build a car around their body and trap them inside of it and say, you should be okay.
You had a takeout menu from a Chinese restaurant in your glove compartment. Yeah. Use that.
Yeah, I built a Chinese restaurant around them and filled it with facsimile of restaurant employees. And then they eventually curled up and died, scribbling on the menu. My insurance is Liberty Mutual, and this is my policy number. And then they die.
I hope someday this is read by human eyes. I was driving down Ventura. Oh, one thing I really liked when Riker was reading Colonel Ritchie's diary, Lionel Ritchie's diary. So here's the clue to this whole mystery. Where did this place come? Why everything is the way it is? And while he's speaking, Worf wanders off. He just sort of wanders off camera. Where are you going? This is an interesting news.
I got bored.
But apparently he's wandering. I'm trying to remember, where did he? He found the uniform in the closet, and then he wandered over to the night table and found the books in there.
Yeah, Worf kind of has a little ADD in this, right? He's just not...
No lines. I don't think he had any lines in that scene.
Yeah. Well, he did get lines after that, I believe, because I got the room service call, which was...
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Which is actually kind of a funny, like, if anything out of this entire episode you can take away as being good, like, that was a good exchange. I liked that. That was actually funny.
It is a female. We desire room service.
I believe they want a room. And again, so this is Data, like, with his vast data banks of information, trying to figure out what room service means, and he can't figure it out.
Accessing. I believe... to know we want the room clean.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I mean, he just read that book. He just read that book, which probably had the word room service in it, and didn't understand what that meant. So that's all right. But it gave us a funny line from Worf where he said, no, and he hangs up the phone. So
no.
So he's they like three lines in this this scene, and then that's it. So so meanwhile, they're getting...
Card and Deanna are reading the book, right? Because now they have a thread to follow.
Yeah, we do have the one little section where they sort of get communication back, and they have an option with Diana Muldar, Dr. Pulaski, who's also seated. She's like seated in the writing room with Counselor Troy again.
Yeah,
privy to all information about everything about the ship and the mission, and saying that, well, we could beam you out, like we could, you know, basically phaser the building, but, you know, you might like freeze to death in 12 seconds. We have to beam you up and like thaw you out. So, which is like, and that, and nothing occurs from that. It's just sort of like, oh, this is something we could do. We're not going to do it. Okay. You know, threat averted. We have to get out.
It's the only way they can get out. Otherwise, you have to figure it out somehow.
Yeah. We could beam down more people. We're not going to do that, though. We are just going to have you three stuck there. You're going to get no backup. We're not going to beam anyone else down to analyze this closer, or to maybe like stop that revolving door, or throw you a rope and pull you through.
Maybe not go through the door.
Yeah. I mean, like, they could be on the outside. They could break the window. I mean, there's all sorts of options here, but none of those will be employed. It's either die freezing or stay there for 80 years, which is basically, you know,
whole bunch of wacky scenes with Data.
Yeah. Okay. So they go back down, and what happens next? What's the next thing, Cam?
That's when they think, oh, perhaps this book will be the guideline. So Data says, let's blend in. Actually, Worf has kind of a funny take right there. He says, let's blend in, make casual queries. And Worf's like,
Oh, yeah.
Then we go back to visit our cliches at the blackjack table.
Yes. They went to the, they're blackjack again, not craps. For some reason, they switched to craps later on. With the uncredited craps dealer, I have to say, who has a couple of lines, but he's not credited in the actual credits at the end of the show. Yeah. I don't know why he didn't do it.
He seemed like a real... He wasn't schmacting. He was the only one acting in that scene.
Yeah, he was like, you know, the number is 2, the number is 7. He's just like a real human being. He's the only person whose acting still like survives in this time frame, I'm afraid. So we get another scene
that Texas is from Lubbock.
Oh, that's right, from Lubbock. And doesn't he have a 91 Cadillac?
That's right.
Which is like,
how did you get here, my 91 Caddy?
Which is weird because this was shot in 89, so this is the future. Like, what the hell, what time frame is this? I don't know, what are they doing? But they do, we have that scene, but then you're talking about where they're listening to the book, or they're reading the book at first. Mm-hmm. Picard and Deanna start reading the book. And then they come back to that after a while. Well, they have another scene with, is it with Mickey? And...
Yeah. Uh-huh. Enter Mickey D.
Yeah, Mickey D. looking like he's ready to do Smooth Criminal with Michael Jackson in his all white suit there.
I couldn't put my finger on it. That's totally
You've been hit by Mickey D. Dun, 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 dun. So Mickey D comes in and they have their little scene between him and the bellhop, and it's just so overwrought with the hotel desk guy there, like, come on, you guys, don't make a mess in here.
And Picard and Deanna are listening in on this somehow.
Well, that's the best. Are they listening in, or is it like some sort of audiobook?
That whole conversation.
Well, but like the weird thing is, like, it seems like it's an audiobook because you're right, because there's no sound source. Like, where are they getting that audio from?
Oh, I just thought they were somehow magically listening in. The interference around the building? I don't know.
I don't know either. But like Deanna, she's like there's something very tense and intense going on. And Deanna's like, if you don't mind, Captain, I'm going to go away. You know, like, yeah. What are you talking about, Deanna?
You have 3 people in danger. I got shit to do.
Yeah, I don't want to hear the rest of this. But it's almost like an audiobook because like they're all bored at listening to this. So I was like, is this an audiobook or are they listening to it live? It didn't make any sense. They never clarified that. I'd like to think it's some sort of weird breaking the fourth wall audiobook thing that they were listening to that like somehow oh, there's an audio function in this. Well, it's just like a Kindle, you know, whisper. We can turn that on and, you know, it's just like, oh, you know, text to speech, you know. So we play out this little beat and then the Mickey D shoots the bellhop and he dies, I guess.
Wow.
Yes. He got hit by a smooth criminal. There's no question about it.
No woman's worth dying for.
But mm-hmm. but she is worth killing for. That was the full terrible line. And of course, we never see Rita. That's the thing. Isn't this like such a weird episode? Rita. That she is invoked so many times, we never see Rita. It's just this kind of, you know. They put it under the guise of this being a poorly written book, but this is just a poorly written episode about a poorly written book.
You get away with a lot when you say that.
Yeah, yeah. Just
it's
like,
the book.
Yeah, the book is terrible. Yeah, it's making it's full us say of terrible lines.
Cliched characters and dialogue. What?
Yeah. At this point in time, Data suddenly surmises. Is it Data or is it Picard who figures out?
Riker figures it out.
Oh, is it Riker who figures it out? Oh, that's right. Yeah. Like he somehow becomes the smartest person of the whole ship and figures out that they're going to be the foreign investors. So
yeah, Picard tells him how the book ends.
Yeah.
$12.5 million buy out the place for $12.5 million United States dollars.
Which, you know, I got to be honest, that's not a lot of money. You know, in 1991, it's not a lot of money to, you know, or whatever era that is. If it's a brand new 1991 Cadillac, $12 million for casinos.
Express.
What's that?
Oh, it does have, plus, it has, it's a Holiday Inn Express with the casino attached.
This is true. Yeah.
You're right.
On the outskirts of Reno, Nevada, $12.5 million is not that much. There are some houses
then
here in Los Angeles.
Oh, right. Then Data goes to the craps table.
Yep.
To meet up with J.W. Pepper again. He starts saying boy a lot. My blind grandma can roll a six, boy. Jeez. Billy Bob will get him. Like, my cousin Billy Bob.
Boss Hogg suddenly shows up here. With special guest star. Stereotype. So they're going to play craps, and somehow the dice are weighted against winning, which is strange. And Data figures that out just by holding them in his hand, which is fine, I guess. And then he decides he can just go ahead and like squeeze them and make them come up with any number he wants.
Yep.
Sure.
Why don't you like this episode, Kim? But nonsense like that.
But he did do the baby needs a new pair of shoes, which is pretty, pretty amazing and over the top. This is Brent Spiner's moment to shine.
Yep.
And so we get a great casino sequence where they're breaking the bank. And then we have a weird sequence where they're about ready to win. But they have to be generous, and so they have one more bet.
That's right. Captain Picard tells him, don't get out of character, Commander. Not a character. There's a Klingon walking around. Who are you
fool? There's a Klingon and an android, and everyone's wearing spandex. And you say, don't get out of character. What the hell are you talking about? And these are just like weird non-living creatures. I mean, who cares?
Yeah.
Just...
Are you going to say something so off the wall that they're going to break out of this storyline that they've been locked in for 238 years?
Yeah, it's so weird. So then they decide to like bet it all on one final roll, and Texas decides that he's out. This is the weird subplot of like, well, we got to give this guy something to do, some sort of character arc. And he bets against them, and then he loses, and then like he gets... He finally becomes like a human being. He's like, what did I ever do to you? You know, it's just.
Is it personal, boy? Because I didn't show you my car? What? You've been trying to get this woman, this bimbo, to lose all her money so you could take advantage of her?
Yeah, I know. The most reprehensible human being that's not a human being.
Bet terribly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should hit there on that 17. Oh.
Yeah, he's so manipulative. He's just like, oh, I'm gonna sleep with her tonight. Oh, I'm gonna make her lose all her money.
Oh, and then she's gonna say, hi, Bert. Like, oh God, gross.
Oh, so he becomes human for a second for no reason, and then Riker shares the money and says, when the train comes in, everybody rides, and he gives some to the valet. He's, which is like really weird, like all sorts of people.
With a parking lot attendant, even though we did not see a parking lot outside.
Yeah, there's no parking lot. Yeah, like where did he come up with weird. That? It was a parking lot attendant.
Maybe for the room service lady that you were rude to.
That's true. He did not give her anything. So, but he gave enough to Texas to get him back okay. For some reason, Texas was like instantly all right. So his character arc is completely resolved. Vanessa seems okay too, I guess, you know, but Texas is not gonna be able to sleep with Vanessa, I guess.
I guess not.
So
he still has a 91 caddy.
This is true. This is true. They can still, he's still got to play with a 91 caddy. So he might be able to make that work.
And then they leave and Worf gets no lines.
Right, right. I like how the Night Watch manager, or whoever this guy is like, you're the foreign investors. Like after 238 years, like, thank God. Like, it's finally over.
The three people we haven't seen in 238 years. Yeah, could it be them?
Yeah, it's such a weird thing. Like, he's suddenly, like, cognizant of what's happening that he can finally end the program.
The whole thing makes no sense. It's just so full of holes.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. They walk out, so they're finally able to go through this revolving door, and it doesn't disappear. It doesn't, like, it just stays there. I mean, like, it's weird. Like yeah. You would think
that whole bubble collapse then?
Yeah, and then they die. That would be it, right? And they're like, oh my God. Oh, O'Brien. Beam them up. But instead, it's just kind of staying there. They go back to the ship, and I don't believe there's any sort of coda where they say, like, we've put a beacon to keep anyone away.
That's true. It's just they like, left Colonel Ritchie's body there.
Yeah, his body's still there. And it's just like any, like if those Klingons come back, you know, hey guys, I feel very bad about this. We should go back and check out that rubble. And then they go beam down and go in there. They can never get out. A bunch of Klingons.
I feel very bad about this.
Yeah. These Klingons
very
have
sensitive Klingon.
They have Texas's remorse, you know. It's like, oh, what did we ever do to you? You know, because I didn't show you my Klingon.
Kirkbusters.
A lot of people like Kirkbusters. I got to be honest. A lot of people liked Kirkbusters.
Loved Kirkbusters.
Yeah, it was me.
No, they have their little coda at the end where they bring up Fermat's theorem again.
Yeah,
the puzzle we may never solve for 6 years.
And then they just kind of fly away, you know? There's just...
Yeah.
Like his Picard's lack of caring about what the hell's going on here. Who are these aliens? Why they imprisoned this guy? And if they could come back is completely, like, delinquent of any sort of duty he has to solving it. He just doesn't give a shit. He just wants to, like, work on, like, Sudoku puzzles, you know, and sit in his ready room, you know? He's like, well, we may never know, Riker. Well, you could maybe do a bunch of sensor sweeps. You could maybe
job to figure it out.
To seek out new life and new civilizations to boldly go. I'm going to check out this Fermat's theorem. One, I think I've almost got it, Riker. I think after 800 years, I'm close to it. So let's fly into the sun. Here we go. Everyone's happy. You know, it's,
set a course for the nearest sun. Oh, this episode's terrible. When you said you wanted to talk about it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch it again. Ay.
But it has so many good, bad lines.
Frustrating. I can't believe the series survived past season two. Seasons one and two are just like, ooh, rough.
Well, they're rough in places and okay in other, because season two also had episodes like Q Who, which is where we first encountered the Borg. Yeah. So it was really kind of a, you know, like a sine wave of just roughness. It's like sometimes it was great, sometimes it was terrible. And this
you
was,
people were so starved for Star Trek at that point, they're like, we'll take the dumb episodes with the good ones.
Well, I mean, if you there was nothing on. I mean, like X-Files was on, I think, around that point in time. And that was about it. I mean, the 80s was like the Royale. It was just like this black void with no science fiction. Like maybe a science fiction movie every once in a while would come out. You know, you watch old reruns of shows or old movies from the 50s and 60s.
What else was on TV at that time, sci-fi wise?
Like very little. I mean, like in 89, really? Again, like X-Files really kind of started. X-Files and Star Trek really kind of started this current bubble that we're in, this current oxygen bubble that we're in, trapped in superhero movies and like science fiction remakes like Blade Runner and, you know, Star Trek and Star Wars and all that sort of stuff. You know, for the past like 35 years or so, we've been kind of living in this bubble, you know, how long is it? What is it? 87 to, yeah, to now. It's a good piece of time, 30 years. So it's been great, but we kind of repeat a lot of stuff sometimes. That's my evaluation at 1 o'clock in the morning. We need to end this. We need to end this computer program. We need to close it. And, you know, they like just kind of like, they didn't take the book with them either.
Yeah.
Just kind of like threw it on the casino table and just like, well let's get out of here.
Any alien civilization can come along and fall into the same trap. You're right. They should have left a beacon. Jeez.
They should have like torpedoed it. There's no reason to keep that there anymore. I don't understand this.
Yeah, they're all dead anyway. Yeah. Say, bring back the body of Colonel Ritchie.
Yeah, like I'm sure like the Ritchie, so like
that mystery
like,
can be solved.
Yeah, like if there's anyone surviving from the Ritchie family line, they'd be like, oh, we found, you know, your great 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 grandfather's remains, you know, and they're on this planet which the Federation didn't bother to take back with them. So you've got to go into this casino.
He looked gnarly. You don't want him.
Yeah. If you want Colonel, if you want your great 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 grandfather, you got to go into this casino and break the bank. And become the foreign investors. So good luck with that. We're not giving you a ride. So, you know. The one thing I will say about this, in defense of this, and also as I did in defense of Move Along Home from Deep Space Nine, is that this has a very video game-like feel to it. In that it's like the early games of like Zork and Myst, where you're wandering around and you're talking with characters who repeat the same thing over and over again. And you're just looking for the right verbiage.
Did you ever clues?
Yeah.
No, I love Myst. Yeah.
Well, like Myst and Zork. Zork was like a text-based game. It's like those ones you'll play on your computer. It's like, do you want to go north, south, east, or west? You know, go west. You know, there's a key on the ground. Pick up key. There's a lock. Open door. You can't do that. Twist knob. You can't do that. Use key. Yeah. You can't do that. Insert key. Like you have to find the right verbiage for it. It was so frustrating. And that's what this episode was like. It was like one of those frustrating Zork games. Where you couldn't figure it out until you figure out the right, like whatever the programmer decided was the right word to use.
Yeah.
And I couldn't finish those games because I didn't know what the hell to do. It's like you have an apple, you know, eat apple, consume apple, digest apple. What, you know, oh!
What was that game? It was entirely text-based. It said, we started with like, there is a small stream flowing out of a building. Do you remember that? Was that called Adventure?
I think that was Zork. Wasn't that Zork?
Do you know what I'm talking about? Was it Zork?
Yeah, I'm just going to keep on saying the word Zork until
someone... His name's Worf.
Yes. I am Zork.
Be my mom. What's that? Who's that? Is that Zork? Yes, he's a Schmingon from...
Oh.
I am. Cracking up.
We do have a little bit of Star Trek Discovery news, and that there was a rumor. Well, actually, Michael Dorn, Zork, Commander Zork, Starship Enterprise, was contacted about possibly playing one of his ancestors in the new Discovery series.
Not the attorney guy.
I hope so. I hope they like need an attorney for like accidents or something. Like to...
What was that in Star Trek 6?
Star Trek 6, yeah. He was like, yeah. Like he was never named in Star Trek 6 as being Worf's ancestor, like at least in the movie, but I believe it was implied that he was like his great-grandfather or father or something like that. Something like that. So, but he'd have to play that guy because it's of the same time frame. He couldn't just play like a random Klingon. He had to be like, you know, the Accidentes guy, you know, like of Klingon world, you know. It's like, because like who's going to defend
Accidentes
like who's going to defend
nobody
like
outside
these...
of LA will know what that means.
It's they know it's fine. I don't, it doesn't matter, you know. We have a lot, we have over like 300 listens from Germany. I don't know
so
why.
Explain it for our German listeners what Occidentes guy is.
Mein Freunds, guten Tag, mein Freunds, wie geht's? Ich spreche Sie Deutsch, aber ich nicht verstehen, was Sie sprechen. Ich habe eine Jahre in der Schule auf der Deutsch. So if you don't understand it, there's these there's these billboards on the buses in Los Angeles, which has this picture of this guy and the word accidentes, which is Spanish for accidents. And I guess
the number is always like 888-888-888-888.
Yeah. We just gave out the real number of the lawyer firm. So if you want to call that, it is an accident lawyer firm. So, all right, we're at the 1 hour mark. I'm done. You're done.
I'm not done. I'm going to keep recording.
I'm going to go to bed right now, Kim. You keep on recording. This will turn off in about an hour.
Just all the stories of cats.
Oh, gosh. Well, we did cats. That's how I got you into this podcast, by like teasing with cats. But we're out of cats. What? I guess there's a cat in Shore Leave. I guess there's a big tiger in Shore Leave.
We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, we should talk about that. A big tiger with a chain around its neck, if you look, it has this like chain around its neck, because obviously you know, you can't have like a real tiger in the scene. Anyway, so Michael Zorn is theoretically going to be in Discovery, and it just kind of bums me out more and more because it's just turning into this weird kind of fan.
Oh, he definitely is then?
No, he's just been in talks of it, but I see the direction they're going in. At least I hope I don't see the direction they're going in, which is they're just going to make it all, you know, like every episode could tee up something that's going to happen in Star Trek. It's like, oh, well, you know, like here's Dr. Mm-hmm. Daystrom. Oh, and look over here, you know, here's Harry Mudd. And, I said Harvey Mudd, by the way, and someone called me on it.
Harry.
Who was it?
Our court.
I'm going to look it up on Twitter. He kind of laid into me about it. Lots of stuff. Let's see. Bill Stratt.
Bill Stratt.
Yeah, Bill Stratt said I was saying Harvey Mudd. You're right. I did say Harvey Mudd. I was tired. I am tired. I'm fatigued. I'm worn down by all of these strange episodes. We may have to do, what is it, The Big Goodbye? Is that the one with Dixon Hill? I think we might have to continue.
Oh, yes. Oh, another bad one.
Oh, you don't like that one?
Fun one.
That's a good one. I thought that was a good one because it
that's
has
not the one with Whoopi Goldberg, is it?
It is, yeah.
Where she drops in. Oh, okay. I like that part. It's Gloria.
Yeah.
Tell them Gloria's here.
And it has that great moment of the computer characters like suddenly becoming self-aware. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm giving away the best parts. Maybe we won't do it now, but it's when they become self-aware and then like leave.
Saved an hour.
Yeah, we just saved you guys an hour. I hope you're happy.
One sentence recap of all the episodes. Done.
Yes. Just watch the last 3 minutes. It's the best part. All right, so let's cap this off. Thank you so much for listening. As always, make sure you leave. If you can leave a review on iTunes, that would be great. Give me some stars. Give me like some words. It helps. We have to be Trek FM. There are 25 Trek FM podcasts.
Oh, geez.
25. It's like they're growing exponentially. It's like if you have a penny and you double it, after a month, you'd be a millionaire.
Oh.
That's from Balance of Terror. Oh, no. Is it from Balance of Terror? No. It's from, Where No Man's Gone Before. That's
what I just saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like having a penny. Like what's a penny, Sulu? We don't have any money here. Remember that?
Check the tapes of that alien probe.
$12 million United States dollars.
United States.
United States. Me United States dollars.
Loopy, it's after one.
It's after one. It's almost the red hour. Your daddy can take him in. Can he?
Can he?
Oh, all right. Kim, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Kim doesn't sleep, by the way. She stays up all night. And all night. Yeah, so this is
sleep in a box of dirt from Transylvania. Yeah.
She is the space vampire of our podcasting. That's from Buck Rogers. Scary episode, by the way. If you ever watch Buck Rogers, the space vampire episode, pretty scary.
The Gil Gerard series?
Yeah. Did you ever watch that?
Oh, my God. I probably did, but I've completely forgotten it.
it's pretty terrible, but the space vampire one's pretty good. Man. Part of it is I just can't get up. That's gonna be my next. That's gonna be my old age podcast. I'm Mike McCafferty, and I just can't get up. I become an old man. I just won't be able to get up out of like chairs and stuff. I'll need help. I'm Mike McCafferty, and I need assistance eating. All right, this is it. We're done. We like you. I almost said we love you. We do love you in a platonic way. We're stepping out to Eden, brothers. Follow me. Hail, hail, fire and snow. Call the angels. We will go far away, for to see. Friendly angel, come to me.
Oh, my God. Spoken by a lawyer. Ah, full circle.
Ah, there we go. Accidentes. Death to you all.
Ich bin ein Berliner. Death to you.
All right. Thank you.
Madness. Madness.
I'm Mike McCafferty.
I'm Ken Miller.
And I just want to talk about
Star Trek.
Destruct sequence completed and engaged.
Don't you understand? Anything but this.
When the train comes in, everybody rides.
Daddy little Odell, sir, at your service.
Your daddy can put them up, can he?
Mark, a sober, emotional state.
Not a promising beginning.
Make it better.
Hello. I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. He's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I help people. She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My